Let me introduce you to my next guest. They've come in to talk about a new book, The Battle for Bond, as in James Bond, 007, who else? The author of the book is Robert Sellers. He's also come in with the daughter of Jack Whittingham, who wrote the Thunderball screenplay. So, Silva Whittingham, thanks a lot for coming in.
It's a great pleasure. It's good to be here.
What do you remember of your father writing the Thunderball screenplay? Because this goes to the very heart of Robert's book.
Yes, I remember it very well. We had to be very quiet in the house when he was writing, walk on eggshells, tiptoe around. There were long, long phone conversations with Kevin McClory. It was very, very exciting at the time. And I remember it very well.
He had a little budgerigar
called Charlie, that was in the book, wasn't it? My father used to like a drink when he was writing. He used to drink gin, and Charlie liked to drink too. And Charlie would sit on his shoulder, and every
Charlie's
so often,
the parrot.
Charlie, he was a budgerigar.
Oh,
actually.
Right, okay.
With aspirations to be a parrot, I think.
Yes, and he would walk down Dad's arm to where he had the glass, take a little sip, and he'd walk back up again. And as the evening went on, he would be staggering up again. And he used to write with his little bird nestling there.
So Charlie could almost claim to have been part of the writing of Thunderball because, it is, as it was an Ian Fleming story, it is the authorship is still, or was in dispute. That's the heart of your book, isn't it, Robert?
Very much so, yes.
Sylvan's father may have been the original creator of the, or is the original
creator
of the character.
He was the first one to have a crack at an actual film screenplay. There hadn't been one written before.
But
Jack was the first one to actually...
But there was a... Was there not a Ian Fleming book called Thunderball
at
the time?
No, so that was
very
afterwards.
Important to make that clear.
That's the crux of the whole thing, yes. That's the
book
crux
came
of
after
the
screenplay.
Yeah.
So the book was written after the screenplay. It was the first screenplay that was written that wasn't a book. It was written as a screenplay.
And it was written before Dr. No.
An original story, yes.
58.
No, 59.
Well, I think the whole thing sort of started late 58, and the screenplay was written in 59. Because Ian always wanted to get James Bond on screen, but pretty much everybody turned him down.
He had Casino Royale on screen, television screen.
Yeah,
in the
it was
United
a disaster.
States.
It was an absolute disaster.
I've seen it.
It's stodgy. It's American for a start, which is terrible.
Nothing to do with the James Bond
it's
that we recognise. So
yes,
the character, it's a character-led series of novels, and that's what you remember from the films. It's the character. So you could almost put James Bond in any film. Yeah. The story is the character.
After that disaster, Fleming was desperate to get somebody to make it into a movie because he always visualised Bond, I think, as a cinematic character. And he met a guy called Kevin McClory, who was a maverick Irish film producer. And they teamed up, and Kevin read the Bond novels and didn't think very much of them. He didn't think they were very visual.
They weren't great.
They are very old-fashioned.
The time wasn't right.
And I don't think that they've managed to survive the passing of time. You know,
They're very nostalgic. They're rooted in the 50s, which is part of their charm, but they are very much, in racial terms and in stereotyping, they are very much... rooted in the 1950s.
They're just not great literature, are they? But I guess they're journeymen.
Almost. He was a journeyman author. He was sensational at what he did, but he wasn't...
A journalist initially.
Graham Greene, was he?
Did you ever get to meet Ian Fleming yourself?
I didn't meet Fleming. No, my father did, obviously.
So when did your father... How did your father get involved? As Robert was saying, Kevin McClory came in.
He was with MCA, the agent, and McClory went to them to employ a screenwriter to write this movie.
Because Fleming had tried twice to write a screenplay, and we've got the original, because there are snippets in the book, and he wrote his screenplays as almost like a novel. He had no visual sense because a film is all visual.
A film should not have too much dialogue in it. My father used to give an example of a man gets into a lift with his wife on the ground floor wearing a hat.
I'm going to enjoy this example.
And he's travelling to the top floor. At floor three, the doors open, a very attractive blonde lady gets in, and the man removes his hat. Nothing's been said, but you know what's going on.
Sure.
You don't need a single word. And Fleming could not write visually. It's an art in itself.
So it's show us rather than tell us.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, they needed an experience.
Visual.
And Jack Walls, he's worked for Ealing.
Okay.
He was very experienced.
That's one element of the difference between the Fleming screenplay for whatever the book was going to be called, the film was going to be called at that time, and your father's screenplay. But at the heart of the lawsuit that comes, that follows, that we'll come on to in a moment or two, is the suggestion that the James Bond character that we know from the movies, the Sean Connery character, for want of a better phrase, is essentially a character that your father and Kevin McClory, not Ian Fleming, had created, Sylvan.
They, in those days of kitchen sink drama, the Bond in the books was considered too violent, sadistic, misogynistic, cold, alcoholic. So, yes, they needed to make a more suave character that would be accepted by the audiences of the day. I'm not saying that Dad takes the whole credit for that. I mean, there were other elements that came in. Terence Young's direction came in to soften him.
And Sean Connery's acting as well.
Yes.
It's like being in a band, really, isn't it?
Yes,
somebody writes
exactly.
the song,
yeah.
He writes it on a guitar in three chords, and then the drummer comes in and plays
and
a drum
pattern.
And
adds there a little bit. Yeah. It's
then,
a team,
And the argument nowadays is, well, who wrote the song? And,
yes.
You know, many people have...
I don't claim the whole thing for my father. What I do claim is that until my father came on board and wrote the screenplay, nobody was interested in Bond going on film. But once he had written that screenplay, everybody was.
Right. So it was sort of proof that it could be done. This is how to do it.
Well, so Robert, what did he do then that showed how to do it? And also, I really am interested in finding out what the difference was between the character from the Thunderball script that was in dispute in court, the character that Sylvan's father wrote alongside Kevin McClory and Ian Fleming as well. How different that was from the James Bond that Ian Fleming
I think he made it more immediate. Reading Fleming's treatment is chalk and cheese to Jack's. It's much more of a visual punch. Reading Fleming's treatments, it's very stodgy. It's almost like reading a novel. Most of the big action sequences happen off screen. There's a whole sequence. The actual stealing of the atomic weapon is not seen on screen in Fleming's treatment. Bond is told about it by M, but in Jack's, it's visually shown. It was much more of an impact script, so producers could see what was actually going to be on the screen. With Fleming, you sort of had to imagine it. So it sold Bond better.
Would you say it was a more personal character too?
I think he made him more of a playboy, that Bond. It's interesting talking about the character, because now with Daniel Craig, we've gone back to Fleming's creation, haven't we? We've gone back to the literary Bond, the cold
That's
assassin.
Right.
The,
That's
almost
right.
the
Which
the,
wasn't acceptable in those
in
days.
In those days, it wasn't.
It is now.
You know, I think Jack pointed the way to... Because they were thinking of people like...
David Niven.
David Niven and Richard Burton to play the part. Very international people.
Sophisticated.
Transatlantic.
Of course, Richard Burton and Alfred Hitchcock to direct it. I read in your book.
We discovered.
I fell over when I read that. I think that would have worked actually.
Absolutely. Well, we discovered in these.
Perhaps
in these,
not Richard Burton, but he could have carried it off.
Well, we discovered in these files all this information, all this correspondence between Fleming and McClory and the business, the backers, and I discovered a telex from Fleming to Hitchcock asking personally Hitchcock to direct the first Bond film. So that's proof.
And did Hitchcock say yes?
He was tempted, very tempted, on condition that James Stewart be James Bond.
Oh, for goodness sake.
Can you imagine James Stewart saying, my name is Bond?
Hesitating
Bond.
But
Fleming, we have a letter from Fleming saying, I think it was by this time, Fleming was so desperate to get this off the ground that he would countenance James Stewart as Bond, even though he was completely wrong for the part. I think Fleming was so desperate to get Bond on screen that he would have cast anybody in the part.
So the script was completed, and it wasn't made immediately into a film, because by this time the Broccolis...
They came later. They came much later. The script was written in 59.
Right.
By this time, Ian Fleming and his business partner, a chap called Ivor Bryce, who was the money... and he was writing the checks.
Yeah, I saw his grim face coming out of the High Court in your book as well.
He was writing the checks for all of this. They got very uneasy about Kevin McClory. Kevin had only produced one film prior to this, a film called The Boy and the Bridge, which hadn't done very well. So he was very inexperienced. And suddenly,
they knew nothing about the film business. And
they
Kevin,
were amateurs.
Kevin
they
appeared
were
to be an
amateurs.
Expert. Yes. Mm. But as they went along, they realised he was the most, you know, extraordinary.
He's an
great
artist,
fun
then, really,
in those days.
Well, Silverman,
you know,
knew
I remember
very
Kevin
well,
very
yes.
well. And, you know, he was a real charmer and he had a terrible stammer, and but it was, a sort of very charming stammer. And he used to play all sorts of jokes on people and do outrageous things. Mm. But I think they realised as they went along, you know, wildly overspending on budgets, and he was not the person to take this project seriously. Mm. And Saltzman and Broccoli
appeared. I think they realised that the project was getting out of control, that they were thinking of hiring submarines and aircraft carriers. It was too big. It was getting too big. And other interested parties, Hollywood, because of Jack's script, were suddenly realising that Bond could be quite big. And
so
they thought, we don't want to go ahead with Kevin.
It was the Thunderball script that was being sent around.
Sending it to Hollywood, and people were reading it.
It was being accepted.
Yeah, yeah.
So why wasn't Thunderball then made into the first Bond film? Why was it
because
not to know?
Because they didn't want
Kevin
involved.
They didn't want Kevin producing it. Yeah, right. They didn't believe
so
it.
So he owned that script then.
He owned it.
Right.
Well, he owned it with Ivor Bryce. Yeah. Xanadu Productions owned it. But
their own production company,
paid my
yes.
father for it, so my
right.
father did not.
Sure.
It's all skullduggery. It's all who
what
owned
they
what.
Did, they tried,
they were changing
this is the
thing.
Film
they,
industry, isn't it?
I mean,
it's
Ivor Bryce went industry. Into Ivor Bryce went into a solicitor's office and actually changed who owned the scripts. Mm. You know, that, I mean,
they
you'd
tried
be
to
locked up
Kevin.
For that kind of thing.
They
you know,
tried. They gave him 6 months to get
finance,
but they hadn't given him a proper contract, had they?
Right. Yeah,
so he,
and they were stabbing
him
behind.
The money,
yes,
and they knew he
all kind of
the
stuff.
Money,
they were saying, "Don't trust this guy," you know. So,
that's the normal 6 month treatment. Is the normal? What do they call it when you give them the rights?
Well, they sort of say you've got
an option.
You've got 6 months. You know, if you don't want to make it with us, you know, we don't want to make it with you, but we'll give you 6 months
to try and raise
get your own money. But they just. Behind his back.
He was rowed out.
So, why did they think that they could then effectively steal the script and rewrite it as a Bond film when they knew that he had the rights to it? And clearly, he could at any time produce his script and say, I mean, not just the script, but as we read from your book, he had had... So he'd gone so far along the road of trying to get it produced that he'd even had really what was effectively storyboards made of it. And
yes,
so
storyboards.
On, you know.
They'd even gone to the Bahamas and written a budget of how much the unit nurse would cost, how much taxis would cost, how much hotel rooms would cost. The whole thing was
so why would
within
Fleming,
weeks of
why
being
would
made.
Fleming and Bryce decide to try and rip him off, if you like?
They had a better offer, and
but they could have still seen him all right, so to speak.
They
you know,
did
they could
try
have
to
included,
negotiate with
they,
him, didn't they?
Yeah,
but he wasn't interested.
Have it. No, he wanted to produce.
Be a producer.
He wanted to produce.
I think they tried to pay him
idea,
off.
Actually.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It was his idea.
I think Kevin. Yeah, because I think Kevin sort of it's my. This is my baby. You can't. He. There was a famous meeting in Goldeneye, which is Fleming's Jamaican home.
I've been there.
Yeah,
I've been there.
They're opening up.
So by Chris Blackwell now. Yeah, of course. Yeah. Very nice time there, actually. Yeah, very nice.
But he met Fleming there, and Fleming said, well, what makes you think you can produce the film? He said, well, you can't write, this is my baby, you know, this was basically my idea, to write a brand new Bond screenplay as opposed to adapting one of your books. As I said before, that Kevin didn't think the Fleming's novels were visual enough, so that's why the idea came up from Kevin to write a totally new
scenario.
He
didn't really think the books were good enough, did he?
No.
I mean,
he
was buying the character, basically.
Yeah, he loved the character. Yes. He thought the character was fantastic. Let's put him in an opulent setting.
And he was right,
like
because
Bahamas,
that's what everybody goes for. Yes. I mean, people, when you go and see a Bond film, you're not as bothered about the plots or the story. We know there's going to be some baddies. We know the format.
You want some gadgets, don't you?
Of course. And we want to see Bond go through a certain kind of adventure on his journey there and have a romantic liaison along the way, of course.
So I think we have to keep Kevin
and
Kevin
a couple
his
of good
due
jokes.
There. That even though he didn't think much, I think Fleming by then had written maybe five Bond novels, and so we have to give Kevin credit for for realising that the character was a very cinematic character, even though in the books he didn't come across that way, but he could become a great cinematic character.
But then Fleming decides to take this script and write it as his own novel.
Change the places.
And write it as a novel.
Well, I think he had writer's block. He was every year he would go to his home, Goldeneye, in the winter to write a Bond novel. And I think he sat at his desk and looked at his typewriter and thought, I'm bereft of ideas.
Well, by then he'd got
hung up with Bond. He wanted to get out, you know. Yeah. He didn't really like writing Bond novels anymore. Mm. I think
his wife didn't approve of them.
Sure.
Yeah, I think he'd come to the end of his tether to some extent. And
he wrote to someone saying, I have nothing, I think it was Ivor, I have nothing to come up with the daffodils.
Yeah.
Because he always had a book coming out with the daffodils.
I don't think there was anything left in the tank.
and then he spied this script.
Yeah, there sitting on his desk was this script. And he thought, well, it's my character anyway. And I sort of helped a little bit with it.
He'd had some ideas for the story.
Yeah, he had a little bit of input, but not too much. And he thought, well, you know, I'll use that.
Gosh, it must be a different era. A different era. And I think you made the point as well. You made the point in the book about, I mean, the way that you created, or at least you landscape the individual characters for us, that Fleming belonged to a kind of old school type English gentleman's kind
of course, Kevin
he
was
he
from.
Could get away with it.
Yeah, Kevin.
And,
money
would be thrown at it. And Kevin had no money.
But of course, by then, the Bond films were huge.
This is 61, so even this is
still before Doctor No.
Yeah, this is before Doctor No.
Oh, before Doctor No.
But the trial is after, though, isn't it? The trial itself.
It took a while to come to court. In the meantime, they know they've got a vehicle. They know the format of how this screenplay should be written. And Saltzman and Broccoli dropped. They were going to make Thunderball the first one. They dropped that because of the litigation, and they moved on to Doctor No. And using the same format for the screenplay, they went with Dr. No, and that became the first one that came out.
They've always said that they never saw Jack's script.
But they did. There's proof of that.
But there is proof that they did.
There's proof of that.
It became the
there
blueprint.
There is proof of that.
It became the blueprint.
But even for the ideas, because it's so typically a Bond script, what was subsequently made. So, in court, how long did the case last?
They tried to stop the injunction. Yeah, they tried to stop the book from being published first, Thunderball, in 61. They tried to actually stop it.
They only got hold of a copy of it about a week before it came out.
And when you say they, is that your
father
and
Kevin?
Kevin and my father.
Because they had no idea Fleming was writing this book. Because Fleming didn't seek their permission to use the script.
There was no internet.
And there was no acknowledgement. And there was no acknowledgement.
And he wasn't giving them a copy.
That it was there based on their script. Yeah.
So they managed to get a copy about a week before and find that, you know, it was their story, names and places changed, and no acknowledgement whatsoever. And so,
and he called it Thunderball as well, didn't he?
Yes.
Yes.
So
yes,
he used the same title.
It's incredible. But it went through lots of... It was called James Bond of the Secret Service, then it was called Bond in the Bahamas, then it was called Latitude 78 West, and then it became Thunderball. We've actually got the telegram where they actually changed the title. They crossed out one title and right underneath Thunderball. It's a great title, so why change it?
Of course.
People didn't sue as readily as they do nowadays. And I guess, you know, it was quite a hard thing to do. Kevin's original solicitors, Gordon Dadds, told him that he wouldn't win the case. It was only because of the brilliance of Peter Carter-Ruck and his meticulous working out of everything.
Of course, Sylvan, you were working there at the time, weren't you?
Sylvan,
this case would not have been won if not for Sylvan, because she was working at a solicitor's office and she thought they were the best solicitors for the case.
Ah. I was a very junior... Yeah. I was a dictaphone assistant secretary for my first job, 17. And all these famous people were coming in, a lot of famous clients, and I was very, very impressed. And I used to go home in the evenings and say to my father, you never guess who came in today, you know, and all that. And he was, at the time, they were, you know, looking for a lawyer for the main case.
They were in limbo, weren't they?
They were in limbo because Gordon Dadds had said you won't
win
it. And,
so they didn't know what to do.
Kevin, in the meantime, had married Bobo Sigrist, who was the heiress to the Hawker Siddeley fortune. So he had a bit of cash behind him. And he also had a friend in South Africa.
John Schlesinger.
Johnny Gold, I think his name was.
He had a lot of influential friends who were able to bankroll.
He suddenly had
Fleming
backing.
Didn't think that Kevin had the money to take him
the
to court.
Well,
it was a gamble. It was a massive gamble, I think, on Fleming's part. And unfortunately, you know, Kevin answered
called
his bluff.
He called his bluff.
Absolutely.
And so Peter, they took it to Peter, the case, and I suddenly would find that God, because we thought Peter Cartwright was God at the time. He was head of the legal.
Yeah, one of the great libel lawyers of the 60s.
He was head of some very important institution, and suddenly he would be sort of putting his arm around my shoulder in the corridor and saying, "How is your father?" which I actually found very embarrassing in those days.
But he won the case.
He did win the case for them. Sure.
That was brilliant. In 1965, was it?
63. 63. It took two years from the booking junction. And by then, of course, Dr. No had come out. Russia with Love had come out. So Bond was now big business. So there was an awful lot riding on this case now, because Bond now was a phenomenon.
So in the... They still wanted to make Thunderball the movie, obviously. The producers don't care because they're not involved in all of this. It's more about Ian Fleming.
They made overtures to Kevin, Broccoli and Saltzman.
Straight away, then?
Yeah, you can have executive producer credit. We'll give you this, we'll give you a bit of... What did your father get out of it, then?
Nothing.
He didn't get anything out of the case?
Well, he was paid for nothing. He was paid for the original screenplay.
Yeah.
He was paid... He was the top Ealing... He was the top 10 screenwriter in the country. So
but he got credit on the movie, though.
Not the credit he should have had.
Sure.
Not the credit he
sort
should
of
have had.
Original screenplay credit.
Was he bitter about that?
He was very, very upset. He's very upset because he'd supported Kevin very loyally with his own heart attack. His own. I used to hear him crying out in pain with angina. And he'd supported him loyally, and he expected to be going on with Kevin, because Kevin then sold out to Saltzman and Broccoli.
Because Kevin won, of course, you know.
Kevin won. The rights to the film.
Fleming capitulated because he knew he was...
Because the two others had come out, Kevin couldn't go... He couldn't use the John Barry theme. He didn't own that. He couldn't use the sequence with the gun and everything at the beginning.
Because Dr. No from Russia had created a formula.
Sure.
The Connery as Bond... Mm. The gun barrel, the John Barry, the style that we know of the Bond films. And Kevin obviously wouldn't be, if he was to make an independent Bond film, because part of the deal that he won in the case was he could now make a film of Thunderball independently.
And yet he couldn't do it on his own. So the sensible thing for him was to go into
the Yanks
partnership with Saltzman and Broccoli. And he did. He moved on without a backward glance at my father. And Dad was very much the forgotten man. And that was it for him. He was bitterly disappointed that Kevin would not only leave him behind, but not even sort of contact him after that.
I suppose, your father is the forgotten star of the Thunderball saga, I suppose. Is there anything that can be done? Is a book like this, The Battle for Bond, does it go some way in putting your father up where he belongs, do you think?
Oh, yes. I mean, he's been put firmly on the Bond map now. Mm. I'm absolutely thrilled. And without Roberts, writing this very wonderful book, which is very unbiased account, everybody has been saying wonderful things about it. That would never have happened. Mm. In my frustration, all I could do was to dedicate a page to him on my website and put in chronological order from the papers I have exactly what happened, excerpts from telegrams from Fleming. And I just put it out there. The untold story, I called it. And, as serendipity would have it, Robert was trawling Google for items on Thunderball, and he came across it. And so he was the perfect person to...
Because it's sort of a gold mine, because Sylvan
has...
You
were very excited.
Yes, because I went to see Sylvan, and it was like a treasure trove, all these documents, because, of course, Sylvan was given all the court documents... Which included literally hundreds and hundreds of letters from Fleming, detailing almost daily what was going on for about 3 years during the early process of the evolution of the script. The tale was told by the people involved at the time. It was quite fascinating reading it.
It's not for me to want to put myself on the same level as your father, Sylvan, but Robert might want to know of my small role in Diamonds Are Forever.
In
the future. I was only a young boy, of course.
Yes.
In the next book you write, I'll leave it to him. The Battle for Bond is by my guest Robert Sellers, along with Sylvan Whittingham here in the studio with me. It's published by Tomahawk Press. Sorry, the book is not along with Sylvan Whittingham, but nevertheless... Sylvan's here with me in the studio. It's published by Tomahawk Press at how much is it?
It depends where you go, I guess.
Oh, you see.
Yes, if you sort of internet various sites, you're bound to get a good deal somewhere.
It's
yes,
a good bit. The Battle for Bond, Robert Sellers with a foreword by Len Data. Thanks very much, both of you.
Thanks very
Thank
much.
Thank you so much.
Pleasure to be here.